You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream. Good morning, live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Delighted to be joined by our next guest. He is the author of Burned by Billionaires and one of the co-founders of Patriotic Millionaires. Chuck Collins is here. Good morning, Chuck. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Chuck, for people who are not familiar with you, can you share a little bit about your background so we can set the stage a little bit?
Sure thing. Yeah, I was born in Wisconsin. I'm the great-grandson of the meatpacker Oscar Mayer. And so bringing home the bacon meant something different in our family.
But, I bet.
I have been concerned about these issues of sort of growing inequality really since my 20s. And help co-found this network, the Patriotic Millionaires. And a lot of my work is just researching and writing about how inequality kind of harms everybody and how it touches our lives.
I'm curious, Chuck, what is it in your background or in your formative years that led you here? Because it seems to me so many of your fellow millionaires are not in the same place.
Well, I think there's actually a larger segment than we think of people in that position. But, you know, after I lived in Wisconsin, my dad moved our family to Detroit. And I remember I was 7 years old in 1967 when there were the Detroit riots, and it was pretty formative. And one of my takeaways is from my very sensible working class mom who grew up in Ohio. She said, you know, a lot of people feel like this isn't fair. The gap between rich and poor in the city of Detroit, between white and black, you know, and so that sort of planted a little seed, you know, but I frankly lived in a bubble. I grew up in a bubble, and it wasn't until I was maybe later in my teenage years that I kind of understood where I fit into the picture, and later came to the belief that, you know what, maybe too much inherited wealth is not a good thing for me or for society. You know, it's one thing to help your kids,
sure,
with college, right, or help with buying a house or
down
something.
Down payment, yeah.
You know, but when it comes to like dynastic wealth, enough wealth that you don't have to work and you can push other people around, then you know maybe that's too much for a healthy society. So,
when you come to that conclusion, what sort of pushback did you get from friends and family? Because as you said, you were in a bubble, and I'm sure there are people out there who shared that bubble. You know. Was there disbelief? Was there shock? What was the response you get from individuals in that world when you say, I think this isn't a good thing?
You know, sometimes it's a conversation stopper. People are, because so much of the focus of growing up in a wealthy family is how do you stay wealthy?
Right. Right.
You know, how do you pass on as much wealth down the generational line and all that? Although, you know, again, there's quite a few number of people, including my own family, who I think don't sort of buy into that. I guess my approach was to be thankful to my parents and extended family. I mean, you know, I was lucky. I picked my parents,
yeah,
you know, and my grandparents. You're like, took a lot of skill.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm trying to say, well, you know, thank you for the opportunities. I really appreciate it. I did get to go to college without any debt. That's a huge deal these days.
Yeah.
I can tell from looking at my own kids, all of them have massive school debt. You know, but we all have a stake in working to kind of address that, you know?
If you're just joining us, Chuck Collins is our guest. He is the co-founder of Patriotic Millionaires and also of the author of the book Burned by Billionaires. Why is this bad, Chuck? How is this bad for society as a whole when you have so much wealth concentrated in the hands of so few? Because that's where we are.
Yeah. The reason I wrote this book is because people do say to me, well, it doesn't really matter how rich the rich are. And isn't that awesome that they invented that better mousetrap and we're all benefiting from that? And I think there's a part of that story is true. It is, you know, if Greg goes out and invents a better mousetrap, I want to know about it and I'll probably give him some money and blessings upon it.
Right.
But then at a certain stage, people accumulate wealth and power. And that's when I think we should sort of sit up and take notice. How do people use their power? And I kind of argue in my book that when people hit that $30 to $40 million mark, up to that, you know, if you got $30 million, you're set, your kids are set, you've got multiple houses, you're leading that frictionless existence that the rich want to live, you know. But when you start to get over that amount, $30, $40 million, you're not just buying another mansion or a boat, you're buying a senator, mm-hmm. or you're buying a media outlet, or you're influencing the political system, or you're blocking your competition. So in a healthy society, too much wealth at a certain point undercuts a healthy democracy and economy. It's bad for the economy, creates all kinds of distortion. But in this book, I try to say, hey, Greg, Jane, every day you wake up, the fact that these billionaires, the fact that the economy is rigged to funnel wealth to the top, makes you less healthy, makes your own tax bill higher, makes it that trashes the environment, makes it harder to care for your pets, takes away your voice and your vote in a democratic society. And I could go on, but basically, it really does matter. It really does touch each of us.
Before you joined us, Chuck, in the first hour, we were talking about the economy and obviously with SNAP benefits and all of those things. But one of the things that we talked about, when you give poor people a break, when you give poor people a tax cut or assistance, that money goes back into the economy. They use that money. They buy things. They buy groceries. They might do home improvements. If you give Jeff Bezos yet another tax cut, he's not plugging it back into the economy like regular people are. Is that accurate or am I way off on that?
Yeah, no, I think you're onto it, meaning low and middle income people, almost really the bottom 90%, give people a tax cut, it pretty much gets spent in the local economy. Whereas if you get a tax cut to these billionaires, it could go anywhere on the planet. And unfortunately, more of it is going into speculative investing. You know, you've heard about private equity. Mm-hmm. Private equity is basically like a pool of wealthy people's money that's engaged in high risk investing. So, you know, Jeff Bezos has taken his tax cut and he's buying up, he's invested in a company that buys up single family houses that used to, like people used to buy and right. live in. Now they're renting them. Mm-hmm. They're going to squeeze more out of the housing, the fact that most people can't afford a home in this housing market, or they buy up a hospital or an emergency room and squeeze patients. Or if you have any pets, they you know,
veterinarians. Yes.
They'll go to the veterinary clinic yes. and the dog walking service.
Yes.
Oh, you're not imagining it. Your costs are going up. And it's, I think, largely driven by these speculative investors. So tax cuts for the rich just creates bigger pools of speculative finance that is kind of squeezing us, each of us.
And I want to go back to something you just said where, you know, when you get over a certain amount of money. Now, granted, someone said, Greg, I'm going to give you $30 million. I'd be like, thank you. Make the check to cash. But also when you get to that point, then you can be a part of these groups where if you're over a certain amount of money and wealth, losing $20, $30 million is kind of nothing. And if anything, you have the senators in your pocket to be able to write that off to get the tax breaks you need. And something that you just said, Jane, that's very, I think, important to mention is that when we talk about those tax breaks and we talk about that access to programs for the 90% that I am definitely a part of, there's groups of individuals, there are a group of politicians who will do everything they can do to vilify those programs or those proposed bills to say that they are doing nothing but creating moochers and takers from the economy. Yet when someone says, let's give billionaires permanent tax credits, full stop, no halting, no reviewing of the topic. It's this is the best thing for the economy. This is the greatest thing for America because they are going to get that money and they're going to funnel it back to us. Well, they're not funneling it. They are cutting employees. They are shrinking work staff. They are buying up businesses and making it harder for Americans to exist.
Yeah, we're waiting for the trickle.
Yeah, I've been waiting for the trickle since Reagan and I was a baby.
Yeah. Yep, I'm standing out there with my bucket. But, you know, Greg, it's really awesome that you're kind of getting into your inner billionaire here, because I think this is, you know, like to understand when you have that level of wealth, you're constantly looking for how do you park it? Where do you put it? Where can you invest it to get more? Mm-hmm. And you're surrounded by all these advisors who are saying, Greg, let's take 30% of that and we'll put it over here in the high risk, high return fund. So even if you're a conservative investor, even if you're like, hey, I just want to protect my 30 million that
right.
I got here.
Yeah. Right.
People are like, hey, let's, and then, yeah, then it gets into power. Oh, well, why don't we lobby for this legislation to allow you to create a trust in the state of South Dakota, you know, that you can create a dynasty trust to park your money. You'll never have to pay taxes. Your unborn great-grandchildren will still be benefiting from it. That's what these advisors are constantly selling. And it seems awfully tempting. So, you know, and then the fact that we're kind of the deflection onto the less powerful folks. Oh, you feel grievances. You're having a hard time paying for housing or food or groceries. Let's blame these immigrants. Let's mm-hmm. blame these low-income people. You have to understand, you have to deflect attention. If we were all focusing on the billionaires, that would
not work well for them. So
let's blame somebody else.
Right. You know? Well, it's always the other. We have to other someone. You look over there. Don't look at me. It's their fault. It's not my fault. It was never my fault. Chuck Collins is here, co-founder of Patriotic Millionaires and author of the book Burned by Billionaires. The other thing I think is really interesting, Chuck, is that we tend to assign, at least in my estimation, we tend to assign morality to people who are very wealthy. If you're really rich, you must be a really good person. And if you are really poor, you must be a bad person. That's not accurate by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think we make those associations when we see someone of great wealth. Well, they must be a great guy.
Yeah, I think that story of virtuous wealth. And again, I'm not knocking people who start a business. I have a great grandfather who started a butcher shop. I'm thankful that he did that.
Right.
I have relatives who then built up a company in Madison. And, you know, but at a certain point, you're starting to take that extreme wealth and use it to block other people's opportunities. And again, that's to me un-American. And having wealthy people pay their fair share of taxes is not just about raising revenue. It's about limiting power to the power that corrupts a healthy society. It's not hating, as Billie Eilish said the other day. No hate, but billionaires, share the money, man. Yeah. Come on. She was like, that's what she said.
Yeah. She was like, why are you a billionaire? That shouldn't even be a thing.
Yeah.
That shouldn't even be a thing.
And I think
that's a really good question to ask when Michael Zuckerberg sitting in the room.
Yeah. And I think personally too, it's just that when they search for all those tax breaks and all those things to keep their money, they are voting against investing in this country in various ways. So that's just something that always goes in my brain when I think about billionaires.
We're going to continue our conversation with Chuck Collins. You can always join us at 855-752-4842. Stay close. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are joined by Chuck Collins. He is the co-founder of Patriotic Millionaires, author of the book Burned by Billionaires. And Chuck, we're going to get to your book in just a second, but I wanted to share a couple texts that came in the break. Pat from Wauwatosa, according to November 3rd Common Dreams article, the top 10 wealthiest people in the U.S. have gained $700 billion in wealth since Donald Trump's re-election. And Jack in Merrimack says, a lot of times I've asked conservatives how much is enough, and I get no real answer. Most of the answers are similar to, well, they earned it. The other is essentially, aren't you limiting the American dream?
Yeah, those are, I think those are the narratives that hold us back. you know, how, but I think the how much of enough question is really about power. It's not about whether Greg can, should have another boat.
Right.
Right. Or Jane should have another house.
It's about influence.
You know, sometimes it's about power and influence and the power to block changes that the rest of society maybe wants. And I think that's a lot of how billionaire power is exercised in our society, is stopping things. We would probably have a much better healthcare system. We'd have much better schools and civic life if we didn't have wealthy people blocking basic investments. And, you know, there's a point at which, yeah, people earn their wealth. They started a useful business. Let's celebrate people who start businesses, people who create useful things, provide services that we all want. They should be rewarded. Okay, let's stop there. Let's stop calling people communists because they're concerned about extreme inequality, because it's so corrupting. So yeah, we got to kind of figure out how to talk about this. And I just say, after that 30 million mark, it's about corruption, the corrupting power, influence of power. And that's when we should be saying, whoa, that is too much power.
Well, and I think this headline from Mediaite kind of puts a bow on that. Majority of Trump ballroom donors recently faced federal enforcement actions. So again, we've talked about the quid pro quo presidency. It's like, you give me money and I'll do you a favor.
I mean, here's another interesting statistic. Since I started, you know, tracking this, prior to the pandemic, we had about 800 billionaires in the US with combined wealth of about $3 trillion. Today we have 920 billionaires with $8 trillion. So the share of wealth, this is what I think people don't realize, the wealth funneling upwards is accelerating. How is that possible? It's because people are trying to figure out how to squeeze more money out of working class and middle class folks. And we should look at our household budget every day and say, how much money is getting skimmed off to pay, you know, for fees and the rents, if you will, of using some of these apps. You know, a friend of mine's a dog walker. You have a dog you want walked. You can connect with her. You hire her through Rover.com. Well, guess what? They're going to skim off a bunch of it. They're not helping in any way. They're just skimming because they have this app. And then they're bought by Blackstone, big trillion-dollar investment company, so they can squeeze more out of the healthy economy. So at a certain point, it's bad for the economy to have so much imbalance of wealth.
I think the other thing, too, that's important as far as saying, you know, we can celebrate people's achievements in business, but also we should not worship these people like they're gods. You know, in an era of no kings, we have made them into our royal class, these billionaires and multi billionaires, giving them TV shows, watching them in movies and walking through the White House wielding power. I think one of the bigger problems is we've set up a worship culture of these individuals for something that most of us, a majority of us, will never achieve. But, you know, like I said to Jane in the break, my only concern, I'm not worried about getting $30 million. I'm worried about my wife and I just being able to retire one day, period, and then not have to worry about a healthcare scare bankrupting
taking
us.
Your house.
That's all I want. But if I try to say that out loud, someone will call me a liar or a moocher or a whatever. And that's, I mean, I feel like my need is pretty simple. I'm not trying to, as you said, I'm not trying to buy my eighth boat.
Yeah, Greg, you know, I think that's how we kind of like over celebrate these billionaires as if they're kings. And we under celebrate all the people who just work extremely hard, get up, you know, let's celebrate our teachers. Let me celebrate the road crew guys who are out plowing while I was lying in bed last night. You know, let's celebrate the people who make sure we have food on the shelves. Like, it's just, we've gotten out of balance, and we have a lot of pride in our work, but the way we overvalue these billionaires, like they're some sort of cosmic genius. And some of them are very smart, and some of them are quite generous. So they're not a monolithic group, but, you know, we would be just better off with fewer billionaires and more thousandaires. Mm-hmm. You know that 40% of the population has like no reserves. That's what I'm concerned about, just what you're describing, Craig.
Pick up the book, Burned by Billionaires. Chuck Collins has been our guest. That is his latest book. He has a number of books. He's the co-founder of Patriotic Millionaires. Chuck, you can come and hang with us anytime when those people shun you. So you're always welcome to come and hang out with us.
Great talking. Invite me back anytime. I love talking. Think in Wisconsin.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate it. News coming up next. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvitini on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter's. We call her Civic Media's genie of just about everything because she is everywhere at all times. No one is ever actually sure.
She's like
where
that
she
movie,
is.
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Yeah. Terry Barr is here. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Hi, John. Jane, you got me all flustered. Let me start over. Hi, Jane, Greg, and I didn't know you called him Calvitini.
Oh, he's got many. We have many names.
There are many names.
Calvin.
The Board Lord, Calvitini.
Sweet Calvi.
Calvinator. Yeah.
Calvinator. That one has become a favorite, but that was a new one to me.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Jane, I think I'm flustered as well to speak with you, knowing you have the countdown underway to retirement.
I do.
Wow. Oh, we need to bring up, we need to make sure Europe's The Final Countdown is a hotkey from now on. So when anyone brings up that phrase, the countdown. Yep. All right. All right. Got it.
December 12th will be my final show.
Boom.
We have.
I picture you with a calendar right now. You know, either ripping off the days or marking off the days, just making it fun.
It's going to be so much fun. Absolutely.
Yeah. I imagine December 12th at about 10:50. It's going to be like, now let me tell you what I really think. And it's just going to be like, oh no.
Jane vents her spleen.
Open up that FCC account. Oh my goodness.
How much is an FCC fine these days? Maybe it'll be worth it. No, probably.
Oh my gosh. I love you guys. So much fun.
So what are we going to do today for a slice of Wisconsin?
Okay, I have something really fun for you today because, you know, why not? We need to hear about fun things as well.
Absolutely.
It's to that time of the year where you feel like I need to, you know, kind of try to stay out there. I don't need to cozy up and sit on the couch for the rest of the winter or anything. So get this now, for a slice of Wisconsin, did you know Wisconsin has a brand new trail and you can follow it to all your favorite restaurants?
Oh.
But it isn't just any type of restaurants. We are talking about a prime rib trail that takes you to the best supper clubs all across the state.
That's fabulous.
Yay.
That's fabulous.
Well, here is Caitlin Kessler, and she's with the Wisconsin Beef Council. She's going to tell us a little more about this.
We have a lot to brag about in Wisconsin when it comes to our prime rib and our supper club tradition. We just saw nominations from our folks who love supper club, love enjoying that tradition with their families. And so that's how we got the 16 that are currently on our list. And we already have hundreds that are on our nomination form for next year. People have been throwing them in left and right. In the meantime, it's just been a lot of fun to see all the excitement for 2025. We have folks from out of town who ask, what is a supper club? I always just say it's the culture, right? It's when you walk in and they greet you with a friendly smile, you grab that old fashioned at the bar and you anxiously await your seat. It's people come together over great food and camaraderie.
The old fashioned,
great.
Old walk in, yes, and the old fashioned at the bar, which is so quintessential Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah.
So, are these places all over the state?
Yeah. So you're probably wondering, how do I follow this trail? How do I get on the trail to start with? It really hits every single point across the state. And there is a map you can find, so you can keep it in your car if you want to, you know, hit a couple, probably not a couple in one night.
You may want to space those out. Yeah.
There's the Black Otter in Hortonville. Now, I've been there. It is amazing. It is incredible. There's also the Packing House in Milwaukee.
Packing House has been there for a long time. Long time.
So there you go. Yep. It's one of those that has the heritage and the history.
That's on Layton.
Del Bar in Wisconsin. Dells. Now we get to some fun names. Chicken Chasers in Fall Creek. And the Loading Zone in Wausau. There's 16 altogether right now. And again, at all different points of Wisconsin. You can find the map at beeftips.com. Beeftips.com. The cool thing, there's a description for every single one of these supper clubs, all 16. And there's a place, as you heard her say, they're already getting hundreds of people nominating their favorite supper clubs to be on the trail next fall.
That's great. That's
Isn't
great.
It fun?
Lots of love for Wisconsin supper clubs, which again is very, very quintessential Wisconsin. I don't know about you guys, but I kind of rate a lot. A lot depends on the relish tray. I put a lot of weight on the relish tray. If it's just a couple carrots and some celery, you lose.
But okay, not an argument, but a point on this. I feel the same argument can be made about Bloody Marys, also very quintessential Wisconsin when it comes to go anywhere outside of Wisconsin and ask for the chaser and they look at you like you're an idiot.
But yeah, what?
I find that if you go to a place with a Bloody Mary where the accoutrement is celery and that's it, it's usually going to be an amazing Bloody Mary. When you go to the places that have everything under the sun, basically a breakfast on top of a cup, then you're like, well, it's a fine Bloody Mary, but I'm really paying for, you know, the scrambled eggs they put in there.
They're disguising the quality of their Mary is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Have you been to the fourth base in West Allis, right behind Milwaukee?
I haven't been there in a long time.
They have bought those Bloody Marys that they do it right. It's really good. But then, Greg, to your point, they still add. So it comes in the biggest glass you can ever get. It's crazy.
I went to a place once where it was a block of Gouda cheese, and I'm like, all right, I'll get this and get a – and there was so much that if you ordered – an food? Entree, they knocked money off of the Bloody Mary, and I'm like, well, that's great. I'll save money. By the end of it, I ate the food, and I ate the Bloody Mary, and I wanted to just go and take a really long nap. So the there's more to be nominated. Are they saying that this is just the beginning, and next year, do they have like sort of a, we're going to add this many more for next year, and you know, does it come with a cool booklet?
They do not have a set number. It started with 16 this year just because they did reach out to various people and asked, okay, if we can have a top 16 all across the state, all the way around, who should we put? So this really is just getting this started as the first drive or step to all these supper clubs.
Fair. Yeah.
I don't think they have a number for next year, but they are willing to listen to what anybody has to say, why it should be on the map as a great supper club and also as a great prime rib spot.
Well, and what a great way to get out and see parts of the state you may never have been to before, right?
I agree.
Because some of those, some of these supper clubs are in much smaller communities and they're still fabulous.
Yeah. And they depend on people, you know, not just their locals to come in, but people that hopefully are driving by and are looking for kind of this quintessential supper club atmosphere. And you know, the minute you walk in, you can feel it. You know, when you're in a real Wisconsin supper club.
Absolutely.
And there's one, and this is just me. I'm not being paid by Big Supper. I'm looking at it right now. I just think it's beeftips.com. I will put the prime rib trail on the show notes so people can see which ones are out there. And it's all over the state. In my opinion, my humble opinion, there is one that is frightfully lacking, and that is the Hobnob in Pleasant Prairie. On the lake,
I know
right
exactly
by
where it is.
Right by, I think we talked about this yesterday too. It is right by the border. It is famed for being a place where mobsters want to hang out.
Love that.
It is a pure and traditional supper club in its design, presentation, everything. It's not one of these places where they just opened last week and they're like, hey, we're going to...
No, it's been there forever.
It's been there forever, and you dress up, you feel good. It just, you grab a drink at the bar. The last time I went there, there was a jazz trio playing. It is a lovely night out.
Yeah. They got the mirrors, you know, the mirrors on the walls and the red banquettes and all of that. It's, oh, yes.
Everything's carpeted.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. That's when you know.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, Terry Barr is here, our colleague at Civic Media, and we are talking about Slice of Wisconsin, the prime rib trail that you can now set off upon, probably in a car. I don't think you're going to want to... Walking would probably be good. This brings us to prime rib versus filet mignon.
Oh, here we go.
Which is something that I actually experienced 2 weekends ago. We went to Delaney's Steakhouse in Madison. Thank you for the recommendation, Luke Mathers. And I got filet mignon and Bridget got prime rib.
Okay.
And I have to say, for me personally, I don't know if I would get prime rib. It's just the look of a filet, really nice. Also realize that 6 ounces is enough.
Yeah.
Whereas prime rib can be a lot.
A prime rib is like half a cow.
Yeah.
It really is. When they bring out that, it's a woof.
Yeah. Here's the bell too. Enjoy. What is your go-to? When you get in front of a steak.
I will have a petite filet.
A petite filet.
Yeah, petite filet. Because that's about three or four ounces. That's plenty.
Yeah.
That's plenty. And then with everything, and then you've got the relish tray. And then the, you know.
And the salad bar.
And the salad bar. And then there's the bread basket and all of that stuff. And then the spud. And, all, you know, it's like, woof.
I got hash browns.
Yeah. Now you're taking a nap.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. Everywhere we were done, we went right to the hotel and was like, we're not going anywhere. We're going to bed now. And it was 7:45.
Oh, you got
living a wild life.
Yeah, I mean,
living a wild life. Yeah.
Terry, do you have when it comes to steak? Are you? I mean, first of all, if you are a vegetarian or a vegan, I apologize for assuming. But if you go out for a steak, is there a particular type you like?
It would be, as Jane said, the petite.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is fish in any way on the menu,
yeah.
I'll go that way. A pescatarian.
Mm.
Good for you.
I'll do a good salmon. Oh,
yeah.
A good piece of salmon.
So good. And my dad was a long, long time dairy farmer, a couple generations.
Yeah.
So we would go out, he would look at me and be, you know, what?
Where's You're eating fish?
Yeah.
You're a traitor to our family.
I know. So. Those words ring in my head all the time.
Oh, Terry, that's so funny.
Wow, that's pressure.
I know.
You join Pete Schwabba every Friday night, don't you, for Bar Band Friday?
I do. And this most recent one, I found Wisconsin originally made music for Halloween. And you wouldn't think Wisconsin bands or bands based in Wisconsin are going out of their way to make their own Halloween music. But I found a couple that did, and we had so much fun with that.
That's great. So go back. You can listen to all of these. Everything is archived.
Mm-hmm.
Go to civicmedia.us. At the very top, it says shows. Click on shows. Go to Pete Schwabba and go to last Friday's interview with Terry Barr. She joins Pete on Friday night's Bar Band Friday with Terry Barr. Yes.
Yeah.
She is our genie of just about everything. Thank you so very much, Terry Barr. We will see you in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Thanks to both of you. Love to chat with you.
See you later.
Bye.
Stay with us. This shouldn't be a thing. On the way, you are listening to Matt Nair on air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, our one, our only Calzone on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up tomorrow, first Wednesday of the month, Darren Von Ruden will join us, the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Mm-hmm. There's a deal with China.
Well, we're
ish.
We're going to be talking about. So I reach out to him every time to see what he wants to talk about. And he wants to talk about the government shutdown because that's having a big effect on farmers and us as Americans. The China soybean deal, as well as the dairy modernization bill in Wisconsin. So we'll be talking about all that with Darren. It's great to have him around.
It is.
It's great to talk to our farmers because they really give us a look into the world that, you know, for me personally, I don't live in. And I want to know about because their lives affect our lives.
Without a doubt. We're all kind of part of the whole team.
Yeah, it's like it's like we're a community who should work together. Whew.
On the planet together. It is 10:54, Calvin. That means it's time for...
This shouldn't be a thing.
If you ever find a thing you think should not be, send it in to Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. JaneSays, JaneSays@civicmedia.us. We had to sit on this for a little bit just because last week was all Halloween themed tisbats.
This wasn't a spooky one.
This was not spooky, but we kind of love it anyway. This from the BBC. Of course, that big jewel heist at the Louvre in Paris.
It's weird that they even still do jewel heists. You know, like that feels like a very bygone
70s.
Thing. Yeah, you don't heist the jewels. You just go into their computer and take their money.
No, now it was an actual jewel heist. They've actually arrested two people now.
Yeah, I heard about
that. In connection with this, but that's not our concern.
No.
Our concern is, the headline reads, Louvre heist lift maker seizes the moment with a new ad campaign.
Love this.
So the thieves at the Louvre used this piece of equipment to hoist themselves up to this window.
Yeah.
The German company that makes that lift decided to launch a new advertising campaign based on what happened.
The Boker Agilo. Sorry, that's not a terrible German accent.
Verne-based firm Boker this week. This is a couple of weeks ago, posted a post featuring the now famous image of their furniture ladder extending up a balcony outside the gallery of the Apollo. The quote says, when you need to move fast, the Boker Agilo transports your treasures weighing up to 400 kilograms, quiet as a whisper. Video emerged of the thieves escaping on the mechanical ladder after stealing over $100 million of France's crown jewels. The managing director of the company said when it became clear that no one was hurt, which was good, they decided to use a touch of humor to draw attention to the family-run business. Mr. Alexander Boker says the crime, of course, is reprehensible. That's clear to us. But this was just a chance for us to use the most famous and visited museum in the world to get a little attention for our company.
Excuse me, do you need to, here's the thing is, whenever I want to do a German accent.
That was pretty French.
I will go French. Whenever I want to do a French accent, I go German. I just wanted to do something like, hey, do you want to, no, I can't.
Do you want for that?
That sounds like Dracula. What are you doing right now, Jane? That's offensive to everyone in Germany and or France.
The jewel thieves had arranged to have the machine demonstrated to them before they used it. Let's take it out for a test run.
That's something that Wisconsin would do, too. Oh, yeah, we'll totally take you out. That's fine.
Well, I want to see if it's going to work.
Yeah.
The thieves then arrived at the Louvre shortly after the museum opened its door. It took them only 8 minutes to get up and in and back out. But again, two of them are in custody right now.
Mm-hmm. And the Boker Agilo people are reaping in the rewards of benefits of exposure. There we go.
They said from news reports, they have sold a couple of machines.
I think that's hilarious.
After this ad campaign, when you need to get away quick.
Do you need to wash some windows, put a big star on top of a Christmas tree, or maybe rob a jewelry collection?
Rob a famous museum.
Get yourself a Boker Agilo or a Gilo. I wanted to do that all in a German accent, but I can't now. I'm so self-conscious. I used to be able to do German, and now it's gone.
Practice. We'll do it tomorrow.
Thank you.
That wraps up today's episode of...
This shouldn't be a thing.
As we said, Derek Von Ruden will be here.
Darren Von Ruden
will be here tomorrow. That poor man. I do this regularly. I'll just call him D. We'll just call him D.
DVR. Nope, that's bad, no, too. That's bad. Doesn't work either. Nope.
He will be here tomorrow.
Yeah.
Head of the Wisconsin Farmers Union.
Yes.
And much, much more. Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers and everyone at Civic Media. Without you, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and for texting and listening and watching on the stream. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today, even if it's just a little bit, and you have the chance to share it. Keep it right here. We have news coming up next, followed by Tom Hartman on the Civic Media Radio Network. We will see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.